Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is James Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
Not much. Just sad over here all by my lonesome.
What's on the show this week? We'll get to that.
We will. We're doing a Tokyo Game Show special up for this week, which really means Final Fantasy VII Remake, Death Stranding, some Resident Evil, and Gungrave, weirdly enough. But those are kind of big things out of Tokyo Game Show. We're a little bit behind, about a week behind on it, but enough good stuff came out that it's worth talking about. So that'll be our focus for today. Was going to be our focus with you sitting here next to me, but alas, not so much.
Yeah, so remember how I said that we need your money? Remember how I said that? Well, we need your money, and we need lots more, because I need to get some help. That's all there is to it. I need to get some help. And there's pretty much no more to be said about that other than my family came in just before we're supposed to leave, and they're like, yeah, we got to bail.
Yeah.
And I'm going, really? Seriously? Yeah. So anyway, that's where we're at. I'm here, he's there. It's not cool.
It's not ideal, but we'll get it in, hopefully sooner rather than later. And we're getting a show in now, which is good. But yes, we're also going to get some gaming in here in a second, too, which is good. And so there will be content coming for Patreon, and we're excited about that. So even though we're not in the same room, we're still going to be creating some content that should be developing starting today and probably continuing over the next few weeks. So let me get this out of the way right here at the front. If you're interested in getting that content, you should go over to gaminguncensored.com, where you can sign up to be a patron. There's a link right there at the top of the page over on the right-hand side. Big thanks to the guys already supporting us over there: Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, and Brigham. Thanks for all you guys do. We are getting you some content, we promise, and so hopefully it will be entertaining. We're going to have a good time, but hopefully you'll find it enjoyable as well.
So, I have an idea. I think that for me, we need two things. First, we need to find a Swedish nurse that lives in Dallas that could maybe help me out when I'm down there, because I can get there. That's not a problem. I can get there. I can put my happy little butt on a plane, and I can get there. I just need some help when I get there.
I like that it needs to be a Swedish nurse.
Well, you know, like, let's just be honest. Like, I'm going to mention this just because it's in the news lately. I don't need it to be John Rambo. I do not want that. I do not want old John Rambo.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I really don't want that. So if we could go just a little younger and a little better looking, that would be good. But that we definitely do need that, because I have decided after watching this stuff that you very graciously put on the YouTube that we need to really be doing more stuff more often, because it seems like there's stuff going on all the time.
This week
it's Tokyo Game Show. Next week it'll be something else. And I gotta be honest, the stuff that we're gonna talk about this week, I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
So I think we should get into it, because it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. We will hit probably on a couple other things as we move through this, but we'll jump in with Tokyo Game Show news for sure here at the top. And so let's start with Final Fantasy VII, because honestly, that's the one you and I care about the most. And I really think, and it makes a lot of sense. But I think of the kind of big three conventions that we've covered and talked about this year, E3, Gamescom, and Tokyo Game Show. Tokyo Game Show is the one where Final Fantasy VII really showed out, you know? And it kind of, again, it makes sense. It's a JRPG. It's, you know, like it should be. It's kind of, you know, home turf kind of thing. But we found out a lot of stuff and saw lots of kind of new areas, new footage, new trailer, that kind of stuff with Final Fantasy VII. That was super exciting. But let's start with the big news, at least as far as you and I are concerned, because we've been calling and calling and calling for this, and now it's officially a thing that they gave us this year at Tokyo Game Show this year, which is the classic mode for the combat system. And so it is official now that there will be a classic mode that will be much more turn-based, how it looks like it's going to work. And it's still going to be the visuals of kind of the hack and slash approach, the action combat approach. But instead of you having to button mash, you choose the command that you want to attack or do whatever other stuff you can do, which seems like it's going to work pretty similar regardless of which mode you're in. But the attack stuff is going to happen automatically. And so, again, feeling like both a classic turn-based RPG and more importantly, as far as I'm concerned, feeling more like classic Final Fantasy VII specifically.
Couple of things. I'm going to have to turn in my gamer card for probably playing it this way, because it still does the live action hack, 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 hack thing, and then it goes, okay, now you've got enough points. It does the live movement thing for you. And so I will do that, because all I want to do is get to the turn-based part of the thing. If I can, but here's my question with that. If I go turn-based in the video, first of all, I need to learn how to speak Japanese.
Yes.
Because that was really cool. I was glad the video was in Japanese and did not have an American goober from IGN or GameSpot going, hey, look! Yeah. I really dug that about all this, that it was in Japanese, but I need to learn to speak it. One question I do have is, if you run in classic mode, which I undoubtedly will, I have my doubts that you will through the entire game, but I will have to play the game at all. So I'm going to run in classic mode. If you do that, what is your difficulty? Is my question. Because they got easy and they got normal and then they got the classic mode.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really curious about that too. There's definitely some open questions here. I think that's a big one. How do you maintain the challenge, especially again being representative of the original game, with it not being dependent on reflexes, with it being not dependent on your button mashing abilities? I don't know. It's a good question. Can I say something though here that is maybe, I don't know, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Can we be honest about the difficulty of the original Final Fantasy VII? It wasn't that hard of a game, right?
No, it's not.
There were moments that were hard, like when you got to the what were the big special bosses called?
Weapons.
Thank you. I wanted to say machines. Weapons. I'm like, machines, isn't it? Yeah, like when you got into the weapons fights, the one that you had to complete in a certain time limit and that kind of stuff, those were darn difficult. And so it did have its difficult areas. But if you just played through the game, like, I didn't die a whole lot playing Final Fantasy VII. It always felt like, you know, like your health would get low. You had to use some potions. But by the end of the game, you were like stacked with gil. You were stacked with, you know, potions. You had all the, you, like, you just felt like you were indestructible.
And there's the thing. There's the thing that I hope exists in the remake, which is the Phoenix Down.
Yes.
That kept you out of trouble a lot, because I did die in combat quite a lot. Not because I was dumb, because it's turn-based combat. You can't really screw up. Just because I wasn't leveled appropriately for where I was at. So I did die some, but like you're talking about, the potions and the Phoenix Downs made it possible to get through some of those areas.
Yeah, but that's absolutely fair. You did die, but you didn't really game in die because you had a stash of Phoenix Downs on you. And you did have to be tactical about that. I mean, there was an approach to it that made it still strategic, resource management kind of way. But I honestly would like to see maybe a little bit more of a challenge, you know, from the classic mode in the remake versus the kind of standard mode in the original. I don't want to die all the time. I don't want you to make it super hard. Like, I don't have time for that. But I'm okay with a little bit of challenge. I don't know how much of that you'll get in classic mode. It feels like classic mode may be like, hey, you really want to experience the story, don't you? You know, like, here's the way to do that. Which I'm, at the end of the day, I'm fine with. What I can envision myself doing, and another, I'll bring up another question I have about the classic mode in this, but what I can envision doing is having it in the kind of standard battle mode for like just the random encounters with the little enemies or whatever, that is probably going to be just a lot quicker to go hack and slash through, that you may never even fill up your ATB or whatever, you know, like you just want to move on. And then use that classic mode for like the boss fights where you want to be more strategic, you want to plan out stuff. But that gives me to another question I have about classic mode that I couldn't really tell. And part of it, you pointed out already, that the videos are all in Japanese. So we're just trying to figure out what's going on by watching and not hearing them actually, or not understanding what they're saying in their commentary. It didn't look like with the classic mode that it was like switching from character to character, right? Did I just miss that? Maybe I did. But if it's in classic mode, I want to be able to assign what each character is doing, you know, in that, again, Final Fantasy kind of way, what we know of as Final Fantasy combat.
I think you can, but because there was a point at the end there where Cloud was doing his thing, and then it switched to Barret, and you were making choices for Barret. So I think there is a switch.
Maybe so.
Just like there's a switch if you're in, I don't even know what to call it, action mode.
Normal
or whatever.
Mode, yeah.
And so I think there is a switch, just not real obvious how it's going to work.
Yeah, maybe more so. Yeah, I would imagine you could be able to manually switch. I guess more so what I'm saying is I would like for it to automatically just kind of cycle through without you having to manually switch. If you got to hit a button to go back and forth between each character to set up kind of the combat, I guess that would be fine too. Just again, because we're so nostalgic about this game, I just like, I want it to be old and new at the same time, and I know how ridiculous that is, but I want it to feel like that way I played Final Fantasy VII when I was 15, you know? And so I want it to have these little elements that I remember as core elements of the gameplay. And then there's a good chance that after I play it like that for 5 minutes, I go, screw that, I'm just going back to a normal mode and playing in action all the way through.
I think you probably will. Because there was a spot, and this is how you know that I have the brain of all the rest of you guys out there, but just don't have the reflexes. There was a spot where Cloud was fighting that spider-looking thing with the rockets, and dude was in classic mode. And so the game was doing all of the attack, attack, attack for you. And the spider thing, I don't even know what it's called, shot out its rockets. and they landed on cloud. And my first thought was, dude, move. You know, like, move.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in action mode, I'm thinking you could probably dodge those. I thought that was interesting that I had that thought, because I'm like, if that was, it did what it was supposed to do for turn-based mode, and now I hear Chris Rock in my head saying it did what it was supposed to do. So that's where I think it's going to be a little weird for both of us, because we love this game, but at the same time, you and I have both been playing current games, and we know how things are supposed to work. So when somebody shoots at us, you gotta move, and I die a lot because I don't have reflexes, but I know I'm supposed to move, and so it's going to be a weird feeling.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Ultimately, we're going to play with it both ways, all ways, every kind of approach you can have with the game. And we'll land wherever we land, and so I'm excited for... Really, again, this game's not far out, 5 months or whatever at this point. When we get it, that we can then talk about this all in retrospect and go, oh, yeah, we thought we would do this, and no, not at all, whatever.
Okay, so two things on that.
Yep.
Because if I play this in mouse and keyboard, it's going to be all classic mode all the time. I can tell you that right now. It's mouse and keyboard, all classic mode all the time. But we really need to get the accessibility controller up and running in the next 5 months. Because if I could play this on the accessibility controller on a big screen, because I want to play this on the biggest screen right. I can possibly find... I'm going to want to do it that way. And if I'm playing with a controller, I'm more likely to play in action mode.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would make a whole lot more sense, the action mode with a controller. And so
that's probably not the name of it. So if you're going to write in or call in and correct us, yeah, we know. We're just too lazy to look
it
up.
For me. Yeah, so. I mean, I don't think it has a name. It's either whatever or classic mode, and so. But I think you're right. Yeah, the way to play that mode is going to be with a controller. It feels like it's going to feel like a modern kind of action RPG. It's going to feel like a modern Final Fantasy. I mean, that's ultimately what it is. Is they've brought, you know, the old school characters and story and lore of Final Fantasy VII into modern day graphics and into modern day gameplay. And that makes sense at the end of the day. It's a to use a weird analogy here, so if this falls apart, I apologize ahead of time. But one of the things I teach in my classes right now, I'm teaching a class on audio history and aesthetics, and so we listen to like older albums, we listen to newer albums, we talk about the difference between production techniques and that kind of stuff. But one of the things I talk about a lot in that class is like the way the Beatles recorded in the 1960s was because of the gear that they had, you know? Like if they were recording in 2019... their stuff would sound a whole lot different because they would utilize the equipment that they had in a very different way. They were this revolutionary studio band in the kind of middle and late part of their career because they used the gear in new and inventive ways. But it was because of the gear that they had, the limitations that they had at the time, that it ended up sounding the way it did. That same thing's true with video games, right? Like Final Fantasy VII was the game it was in 1990, whatever, when it came out, because of the technology that existed at the time. And it took full advantage of that, and it did things as well as it could. But there's lots of things that it couldn't do at the time that they would have done in that game if that technology was available. Now that that technology is available, it's... what it would have looked like, you know, like we get nostalgic about what it was. And then like, that was the design that was intended, But that was the design that was necessitated by what they were working with. And so it's a testament to how old we're getting that we can look back on it and be that nostalgic or whatever about it. But this is what a Final Fantasy game looks like in 2019. And so we should be, you know, expecting that.
So because you went down that audio rabbit hole, what makes me laugh, because I was going to ask you this question. Have you heard the new Death Cab EP?
I have.
I thought that was stellar, talking about new music.
I really didn't like their last album that they just put out.
No, I did not. I was not.
I was really disappointed in that because I like Death Cab. That EP is pretty great, though.
That EP is really good. If you haven't heard that, folks, it's on Spotify. It's about 5 songs, about a half hour. It's really good.
I'm glad they put it out because I had a kind of bad taste in my mouth. I listened to that album like twice. I was just like, I can't do that again. So, yeah.
Which I feel real good to know on occasion that we have the same ears. Because I heard that and I was like, okay, this is really good. I gotta ask him, and I hope he says the same thing, because I think this is really good. And it is.
It's good. I'm a big fan of Death Cab for Cutie, and so, yeah, I was excited about it for sure. The album before that, Kintsugi, was great. That's one of my favorite Death Cab albums. So, yeah, there's just that kind of sore spot right there in between the last couple of things they put out, so... Anyway, Final Fantasy VII, right? Other things that we got to see via new trailer and gameplay and that kind of stuff, even if we couldn't understand the language that people were talking over it. We saw a little bit more about like menu system and that kind of stuff, and it's so clean and slick. Like that part of it really excited me, because one of the things I do have a lot of disdain for in kind of modern RPGs that they feel really heavy in, like menu systems and that kind of stuff that just are clunky and not intuitive. And this one looks fairly intuitive. And part of that, again, is that we already know the mechanics of the game. Like, we understand materia. Like, we know, like,
right.
Like that's emblazoned into my brain forever, you know? And so some of it's probably just familiarity. But I was excited to see that it's both sleek but still familiar. And so that part of it's nice. Also got to see kind of the first little bits of summons. I got a good chunk of gameplay.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Ifrit, which was cool. The way apparently the summons are going to work is that when your summon gauge fills up or whatever, you can summon whatever materia that you have equipped, of which you can only have one equipped at a time, is my understanding, per character, but multiple characters in your party, whatever. But then they just show up and fight with you, like kind of fight alongside you. And then as their like summon gauge deteriorates when it gets to the end, then they do their kind of big final attack before they peace out on you. But it's really pretty and looks really, really good. And that was one of the super fun things in Final Fantasy VII, when you got that summon gauge built up and you were able to bring in Ifrit or Shiva or whatever. And it's this big kind of super cinematic thing, which in 1990, whatever, was really, really novel in video games. Like Final Fantasy VII was so cinematic before games were really that cinematic. And so now it feels like it's coming full circle.
The cool thing to me about that was it was really cool at the start when you started using those. But when you got toward the end and they got stronger, that's when it really got awesome.
Yeah.
I dug that. So I'm excited about that part of it. You're going to have these dudes fighting next to you, and as you go, they're going to get stronger. I love that idea.
I do, too. I think that's really cool. And another thing I heard, and again, this is all secondhand, so we can understand them, but apparently they're also going to be, the summons are going to be context sensitive to the space that you're fighting in, so there's going to be places where you can't actually summon because you're in like a hallway that's too narrow or something like that, where like they just physically wouldn't be able to fit, and so like you just lose the ability to summon in those spaces, which is both kind of obnoxious but also kind of makes sense, you know? And so it's interesting, but it's exciting every time we see a glimpse of something that made the original the game that we love appearing in the remake. you would expect all those things to be. Of course, they were going to have summons. There was never any question about that. But getting to see a glimpse of them was really cool. The other thing I think they've done a fairly good job of, while giving us a lot of eye candy to gaze upon at this point, they've also been careful to kind of keep some stuff kind of not secret still, but from not being public yet, that should be exciting to discover. The one that I just picked up on the trailer is there's a part that it alludes to the whole cross-dressing section of the game with Cloud. But it doesn't show you any of that part. And that was, again, the first time you play through Final Fantasy VII. There's a couple of moments in that game that kind of stick with you. That's one of them. Aeris is one of them, obviously. But that was a point that, like, when I saw them just kind of allude to it in that trailer, I was like, yes, thank you for confirming. Again, not that we would expect it not to be there, but thank you for confirming this thing that I remember so well from the game as still being a core part of this game. But also thank you for not giving it away either, you know. Like, thank you for allowing me to still be able to experience that in this new way when I actually get to play the game soon.
So a couple of things. We've been talking a lot about nostalgia, and I said when we started this 20 minutes ago that I wanted to play this on the biggest screen I can possibly find. And part of what really is getting me excited is what drew us into that game, at least initially, when we were younger, was that for the time, it was spectacular. There was nothing else like it. Now I have, like, Jerry's girlfriend in my head saying, and they're spectacular, which, but it was spectacular, and you sat in front of your CRT 19-inch TV and went, oh, you know, and I'm like, I saw this today, and I'm watching it, and I'm drooling, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't have a big enough TV. Like, yeah. I gotta get a bigger TV. If there was ever a reason for a 4K TV, this is it. Like, this is it. Because yeah, the way it looks is a big part of what the game is, and you just sit there and drool. And I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just flat out gorgeous, right? Like, it's just phenomenal. It's everything that, like, Final Fantasy looked like in my head, you know? And like, Final Fantasy VII, when you played it, the blocky polygons, again, when we were teenagers, we're like, okay, that's fine. That's what games look like. We get it, you know? But you had those moments in Final Fantasy VII where it went to the FMV sequences, and those were, you know, beautiful. And you were like, oh, yeah, like, man, if video games could just look like this all the time. And now Final Fantasy VII Remake looks way better than those all the time, right? Like, again, we know this. It's 2019. Every game I've played recently, well, not every game, but every new game that I've played recently, I've been playing Super Mario World basically nonstop for the last 2 weeks. Every new game I've played recently is gorgeous, right? Like, Spider-Man is gorgeous. Red Dead is gorgeous. Like, these are beautiful games. And again, just beyond what I could have ever even imagined games would look like 20 years ago. But this one, I imagined what it could look like 20 years ago, and now it looks even better than that, you know, as this remake. And that's something that, like, from the nostalgia factor again, for everybody that's, like, younger than us, that this is going to be your first big exposure to Final Fantasy VII, like, I bet those connections don't fire the same way. But for me, that's what I'm looking at that going, yeah, that's what Midgar looks like. I knew that in my head that's what Midgar looks like, but now to see it there in front of me, like, that's what Midgar looks like, you know? And it gets me so excited, and I'm absolutely with you. Like, I want that plastered on my wall as big as possible just to soak it all in.
And I really, I mean, I sound like a snob, but while my brother was here over the weekend, and we'll get to that in a minute, I told him, partially because this was coming, that it was time to get a new TV. And he literally offhandedly said, yeah, the new 75-inch LGs are only $1,000. And I paid like $950 for this 40-inch that I've got. You know, and we're talking about a 75-inch 4K spectacular screen. And I'm going, okay, you and I are going to have studio space at some point. Can we buy one now and just have it? Because this would be the use for it.
Yeah.
And folks, it's not all about the graphics. It's not. We say that all the time. Not everything has to be spectacular. But in this particular instance, it does. And if it's not, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, I won't say this about just about any game. For me, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, the most important thing about it, assuming that they stick true to the original. So, like, let's put that out there as an assumption and not as a necessity in this conversation. So we're going to assume that they stick true, basically, to the original as far as characters and story, again, gameplay aside. But assuming it's the same characters and stories, the most important thing to me after that is the visuals of this. Because that's what I... that's what I want to experience all afresh, all new. The other things are going to be, you know, icing on the cake. The fact that it's going to be deeper. The fact that you're going to get to play through elements that are only alluded to in the original. You know, like, those kind of things are super exciting. I'm pumped about those. But the thing that's the reason that I want to play this more than anything else is because it's a game that I love that now looks really, really good. And I haven't played Final Fantasy VII in... years and years and years. There was a time, man, it's got to be 12, 13, and more than that, 15 years ago probably at this point, that I sat down with some buddies to go through and replay this. And so this is in my early 20s still. And so it's been, you know, 5 or 6 years since the last time I had played, or the first time I had played through Final Fantasy VII. And like, even then, 15 years ago or whatever it was like, man, this game just isn't that pretty, you know? Like, it's such a good game, and we love it, and this is a fun nostalgia trip, but it just doesn't hold up well, and it holds up way worse today, right? Like, I go back and replay games on a semi-regular basis. I've been mentioning already a couple times Super Mario World, because it's on the Switch now, that I've been playing a bunch of that, and that game holds up great, because sprite-based graphics, for the most part, hold up really well. But early, like, 3D polygonal stuff doesn't. And Final Fantasy VII is right in the middle of that. And I just have had no real itch to go back and play the original Final Fantasy VII. I fired it up a few times here and there. I have it on Steam, you know. I got it for, like, $5 or whatever. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And I fired it up for 20 minutes. And I was like, this thing's really ugly. And it doesn't play that well. Like, it just, you know, like, I love the story. I love the characters. But I don't want to revisit it in its original form. And now you're giving me a way to revisit it in a way that it's gorgeous. It's just, yeah, it's a no-brainer at that point.
Couple of things. You were talking about the menu system. And by the way, folks, if you haven't noticed, this show's going to go long because we're behind and we owe you and we know that. Also, I'm not going to stop talking. So it's going to go as long as it needs to go. But you were talking about the menu system earlier. The one thing I have not seen that I hope I can find somewhere is show me my inventory.
Yeah.
Because the inventory was something that I don't know how to say this without sounding like a shopaholic. But I enjoyed shopping in Final Fantasy VII. I enjoyed buying stuff. I enjoyed, like, having your potions and having your Phoenix Downs and having it all right there. I enjoyed all of that. And I hope it's still there. And I didn't really see it in this demo thing. Like, they healed a couple of times. It was obvious they took a potion. but it didn't show how they got there. And so that's the one thing that I'm curious about on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And again, some of it, like a menu system is a menu system. Even if you can make it slick and feel good, that there's a certain level of what you can do. I say that, but then I think of a game like Skyrim, that as fantastic of a game as that is, just had a terrible default inventory system to the point that, like, if I could only, like, have one mod in Skyrim, it might just be the inventory rehaul.
Sky UI, baby!
So bad. it's just miserable. And so, yeah, I think that's a valid point. I hope we get to see that. I'm curious about how much more of it we're going to see at this point. There's not another big gaming show coming up before the thing releases. And so they may do a few more kind of little things here. Now they may feature it for a state of play for Sony. By the way, there's one coming up this week on Tuesday that I think is supposed to be The Last of Us. Like, that's supposed to be their big thing there. So that would be great and give us plenty to talk about for the next show. So they may do that before it launches, give us one more kind of big dump of prettiness and information and all that kind of stuff. But I think probably what we've seen at this point is most of what we're going to see.
Which is fine by me.
I agree.
Like we're gonna play Zelda later, because you have that in your house, and
yes.
I was really looking forward to sitting in a room, and watching that and drinking a lot while watching that. I was looking forward to that, so I can't wait to get to that today. And this whole, what I'm getting to with that is that we know what Zelda's about. We know we played this game, right? This is something that we've done. It's same deal with Final Fantasy, but I don't want to see a whole bunch of stuff. I want to get to it new.
Yes.
I will admit right before we turn on the mic that I watched IGN's review because I wanted to know what they gave it. So I've seen a little bit, but like, it's been a long time since I played that game. And there's a whole lot that I don't remember. And so it's the same deal with 7. I don't want to see a lot of it.
Yes.
Until it gets here.
Yes. Agreed. It's a game that the last time I've played all the way through it has probably been 20 years ago or pretty close, you know. So, yeah, there's a part of me that's really excited to experience it anew. That there's lots of characters I don't remember, like watching the trailer. Like, wait, who is that dude? Like, what is his role in this whole thing? And I'm excited to get to re-meet these characters. Like, I know Cloud, I know Barrett, but, like, what with that dude? Like, who is he? You know, why is he talking to Cloud? So things like that are very exciting. And the fact that there's going to be stuff in there that wasn't in there before, but it's been so long that I played it that I'm not going to remember necessarily what all the stuff that was in there before, is also exciting because it will feel really fresh and new, even while feeling familiar. It's just like it feels like it should if they execute it well. And by all accounts so far, it looks like they probably will. But if it's executed well, it's going to be like that perfect, like, balance between nostalgia and new, you know, like getting to have this experience from a fresh viewpoint while also scratching that nostalgia itch. It seems like a great balance. So I'm pretty pumped about it, if you can't tell.
One more thing, and then we're going to Death Stranding, because that was the next holy crap kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I know that you and I are going to pick this up day one for $60. Don't care what it costs. If I need to give you $100, then here's $100. That's going to be on both of our systems day one. My question is, how fast are we going to get through that first part? And how long are we going to be sitting there waiting for the second part? And that is the thing that I'm still most annoyed about.
Yes.
Because we're going to put, for as much as we talk about not having time, we're going to put 100 hours in this thing. Period. End. No discussion. It's going to happen. But how long am I going to have to wait to do that?
Yep.
So yeah,
that's a really good question that I kind of dread the answer of, you know? And even, like, what do they show us at E3 next year about, if they show us anything? They probably won't, because it'll just be fresh off that release. But how soon do we get more information about what we're going to get next, you know? And I don't know. That's a big question. That's still, to me, the biggest, hesitation for me on this game. They've won me over on a lot of other stuff. The classic mode obviously is a big deal for us, and we've been talking about it a lot. So they've got us there. And so at this point, just about sold on everything except for this like semi-episodic kind of deal that they're trying to do. I really hope at this point, to be quite honest with you, that it's just two parts. I just like just give me a big chunk again, and let's just have it all across two games and not try to get this out over years and years and years.
And somebody remind me, are we paying $60 per part?
You would imagine.
Yeah.
Can't imagine us not.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
so
they're going to milk that for everything it's worth.
Didn't they say that there was going to be four of these?
At some point, it was something like that. Yeah.
So if they do four, that's $240. Yeah. And I love this game. You love this game. It's one of our favorites ever. I'm not sure it's worth $240.
But is it worth $240 spread out over 6 or 7 years? You know, like, yeah. That's the other thing that we're talking about with it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't love that aspect of it still. But
no.
But we'll play the first episode or whatever you want to call it, part one, and then see how amped we are for part two. And yeah, hopefully, again, my biggest fear of this whole thing is that it just loses momentum as it goes forward, that first one's a huge deal, and then you feel kind of empty at the end of it and then don't want to pick up the second one.
Do you remember, I'm sorry, we just keep going, but do you remember playing through it the first time, do you remember how much you actually slept? Because I remember getting to the end of that first disc, and of course I had to have help to have somebody put the second disc in.
Sure.
I got to the end of the first disc, and I put the second disc in. I'm like, I got to do this now. Like, we had school, we had all kinds of stuff, but once you started, you couldn't stop.
Yep.
And so I don't remember how much sleep I got. I mean, I played it over several months, but it was like binge watching something on Netflix.
Yeah, 100%. I remember, because you're right. It came out like we were in high school. Like, it was like in September or whatever. I don't remember when the game launched, but it feels like, I'll go back and look when the original launched, but it feels like it was just right there at the like beginning or at the heart of the school year. And it was like, we were, me and my buddies, Nathan and Mike, both of whom have listened to this show over the years at different points. And so if you guys are listening, good times, everybody. But we would just like, okay, the weekend's coming. Like, we're going to Mike's house and we're camping out for the weekend and we're playing Final Fantasy VII. That's all we did. We just sat there in front of the TV for, you know, like from Friday after we got out of school till way too late on Sunday night / Monday morning, knowing that we had to be at school the next day. Playing that game, because it was that experience.
And since you are, since you mentioned Mike, I believe the same guy. Mike, if you're listening, can you have Homie Hill call us? Because we need to get with that dude. just have him give me a call. That's all I'm saying. Have him call Tommy and do something, because I haven't seen Homie in 6 months and I don't have his number. So, we need to talk to that dude. Can you make that happen if you're listening, Mike? Thank you very much.
Yes.
You like how I did that?
I do. That's a weird little random connections that we have. And so, good times. Original release date was January 31st. 1st, 1997. I'm trying to think if that was a Japanese release or if that was a worldwide release. So, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're old, moral
yes,
story.
Yes, we are.
Death Stranding. Let's talk about that weirdness. So, this was the other, again, it makes a ton of sense that Death Stranding got a lot of time at Tokyo Game Show. Because
and they got Kojima. A lot. I didn't even finish that. I still got like good 20 gracious. Minutes.
And there's a whole nother one. Like, did you see like any of the Safe House stuff?
No, I did not. Well,
yeah, that's
no,
a whole other one.
I saw bizarre. The camp thing, the
yes.
canopy deal. That's what I saw.
Yep. So Kojima did a couple long demos apparently with Death Stranding to show off a lot about it. So as much as we've seen, especially gameplay wise, showed off tons and tons of gameplay. And honestly, I feel like I get the game a little bit more. I still don't understand this thing at all, but I feel like I want to play it after watching this. I think that was my main takeaway. It's like, okay, I'm into it enough now that not only do I feel obliged to play it because it's Kojima and we do a gaming show and it's obviously a big deal, but now I kind of want to. Like, now I'm into it enough that I kind of want to sit down with this thing and play with it myself, knowing that it's Kojima and it has all the weird stuff. And so, again, we get this. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm maybe more into it than you are, which is shocking because up until this point, I just looked at it and said, that's weird, and I'm old, and I just don't know. But yeah, after watching like a half hour of this thing, it reeks of Metal Gear 5.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he took Metal Gear 5 and just cannibalized it. And, like, it reeks of Metal Gear 5. Do you not agree? Like,
they're at least in kind of navigating the world, I could see that for sure. I didn't think that offhand, but now that you say it, I go, oh yeah, I could see where that comes from. It's still bizarre. But we've seen like the map that's the United States, which I didn't realize up until this point. So that was weird enough in itself. But we saw a kind of world navigation of getting from point A to point B, which is a big part of the game because you're like this delivery dude. And so you're just delivering stuff between point A and point B. And so
okay,
getting from point A to point B is a big deal.
Okay. I'm going to make an analogy here. I'm going to mention something and you're going to get it. Nobody else is going to get it. But I really and truly hope, and it won't happen, but I would love to be walking around the United States. Actually, it's called the United Cities of America. Or something like that. And get to the Boston area and have him run into Cliff Clavin. Like, I just would really love to see that. It'll never happen. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Cheers on Netflix. I think that would be hilarious.
You're so old, my friend.
Like, Cliff,
but I got it, so I'm
Cliff
right
just
there with
appears.
You.
I would love it. But I'm glad that you got it. You're almost that old. I'd be sad if you didn't.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yes, that would be great. So part of the gameplay is like taking gear from one city to the other city and just navigating the world, which a lot of like what they talked about in this one we had subtitles for. So I zoned out of subtitles here and there. But from what I picked up, kind of trying to read along with subtitles, a lot of the like gameplay is going to focus on like not falling down. Like, balance is apparently a pretty big deal of just being able to navigate the world. And so, like, one of the things that's been really obvious to me seeing, you know, trailers and gameplay up until this point is he has like this big, awkward kind of backpack type thing where he slaps all this gear on his back. And it's like, man, how would you walk like that? Well, That's a good question, and you've got to figure it out in the game. Like, you've got to, like, arrange stuff on your weird little backpack thing so, like, you don't just fall over all the time. And it showed him, like, wading across the river where, like, you could see little indicators of where it gets, like, kind of deep and you might get swept away, or where it gets too deep and you're definitely going to get swept away. It showed, like, the ladders to get across, like, chasms and that kind of stuff. And you need to build bridges as you go along. Just the fact that, like, navigating the world is going to be a massive point of the gameplay here, outside of combat and the kind of other dimension, other world thing of this, like the fact that there's like the upside down or whatever they're going to end up calling it. But you've got this other world thing that you have to deal with as well. Yeah. Well, I think maybe for me, why this demo was more reassuring is because it was a little bit less of the crazy stuff, right? Like,
right.
The idea of just, like, walking across the world, jumping on a motorcycle at one point, going from city to city and making these deliveries, sure, there was still a bunch of weirdness in there.
Dog Fred!
Yes. But you still got this baby strapped to your chest and, like, soaking in a little, like, hot spring and singing to it. Just weird stuff. But of a bunch of weird stuff that we've seen, this gameplay was a lot more normal in a way that's reassuring.
And I kind of like where he's trying to go with it. Meaning that they mentioned in the video, actually it was in the first video of like the top 10 games of Tokyo Game Show that popped up. Guy mentioned the point that he's trying to make is everybody being so connected actually tears us apart. And I thought that was really interesting that they brought that up.
Yeah.
Because that's been a major theme on Facebook lately. I saw this thing. I don't know if you saw that, but somebody posted on my wall, some photographer took pictures of people looking at their phones in a social situation and then removed the phones to show how, like, dumb we look while we're sitting at the dinner table or, you know, hanging out with friends or whatever. And the comments that it got were, man, that's really sad and it's really true. And so when I figured out the point that he's trying to make with this, I'm like, man, that's really current.
Yeah.
You know, that's he put some thought into that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. A few things maybe that are new-ish that we found out about Death Stranding, or at least that we have a better idea of gameplay. One, as we've already kind of alluded to, that the kind of inventory / stat management of this is going to be a big deal. The keeping your baby happy, making sure that you have the stuff that you need to get between cities and all that kind of stuff is going to be a pretty massive part of this. The fact that, like, you get tired and need to restore energy and that kind of stuff.
Power nap! I dug it! Oh, man! Yeah. Power nap! That was awesome!
Those seem to be kind of the core gameplay mechanic, which I didn't get until now. You know, like, Tokyo Game Show is when I'm starting to go, oh, okay. You know, like, now I'm starting to see how this works, and that's not at all what I was expecting. On the combat side, it seems like combat's going to be a much less focused element of the game than I was originally anticipating. Obviously, still there. We saw in the gameplay both some combat with some other people where he, like, sneaks through a camp and does a kind of stealthy Metal Gear-y kind of stuff, which looks fun. But also the kind of big monsters, death things, whatever they are. I don't know what to call them, but big supernatural enemies that you're going to have to deal with.
And I was also going to mention, it's very Kojima-ish in that you get rewarded for not going Rambo on people, which that's what he's always done with Metal Gear.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that's still in there.
Me too. I think that's pretty great. And there is this multiplayer component to it that I didn't understand. It's not really, I hesitate to say multiplayer component. This kind of interconnected gameplay may be a better way to see it, say it, in that, like, you can leave, like, notes and actual gear for, like, other players, and they can leave stuff for you. And so, like, if you find something in the world, you can leave a little note to tell other people. I don't know how it populates, like, what stuff you get to see and what stuff you don't get to see, like, how it decides, because I don't imagine it's just going to put, like, a million people playing this game, all of their information in there, you know. But it is kind of an interesting way to make it feel a little bit interconnected without some heavy-handed multiplayer mode that doesn't seem to make much sense.
I really kind of like that kind of, I took it as like a drop in, drop out kind of a thing. That was a big deal a couple years ago, being able to be playing a game single player and then, hey, you can just drop in and now it's multiplayer. This is not going to be multiplayer, but to be involved in somebody else's world, I think that's kind of cool.
I do too. I like that approach, especially in a game like this that's very obviously designed as a single player experience. It still gives you some kind of other connection. I would encourage you, if you haven't seen the Safe House video, to at least watch some of it. It kind of goes on and it's weird, but it just shows the Norman Reedus character sitting in the safe house and like how you can navigate around the safe house with the camera, point at different things. There's this really awkward point where it like points at his junk too many times and he punches the camera. It's just like very Kojima, like exactly the kind of things that you would expect Kojima to put in a video game. But you're like, there's sunglasses and a hat he puts on and makes goofy faces in the mirror, and just like it's weird in a very different way than the rest of the game is weird. And again, like for me, having played Metal Gear for decades, like it's just those little Kojima touches that are right on the edge of cringeworthy and yet somehow charming for him.
He is, because he's the one that actually did this demo
which was great.
With a random girl standing next to him,
who
getting
was also great. Excited. Who is the same person that was in the Final Fantasy VII one as well.
And yes! So,
like, getting to hear her responses, even not understanding a word she's saying, like there's just certain emotional things that you don't need translation for. It was so fun to listen to her.
Man, she was fangirling it up. I dug it. That was so much fun. And having him actually do this for 40 minutes plus, I when we first started hearing about this, and I talked about it on the show, we've said multiple times that dude's nuts. And he is, but after seeing this, and after seeing the way that he ran this demo and the way that he dealt with this person, who I'm guessing is a reporter, that dude's kind of a genius. Like, I don't know what he's trying to do with this, but this is why when you say his name, it's like Miyamoto. This is why he's in that class.
Yeah.
Because he's that guy, and whatever he does, you have to pay attention to. And because of the way he handled himself, and I don't know if I'm making sense here, but because of the way that he handled himself, I got that feeling again that I'm like, yeah, this is why this guy gets to do whatever he wants to do for whoever he wants to do it for.
Yep.
Because he's that guy.
Yep.
Did you get that feeling? Because
I absolutely
did.
This is, again, we've mentioned it before with Death Stranding. It just feels like Kojima just getting to make the game that's been floating in his head for all his life. You know, like it's just like it feels like it. It's crazy to say it, as weird as Metal Gear got at points, but it feels like he was really constrained with Metal Gear. And now he's like nobody's holding him back. And he does have so much respect in the industry that he can get away with it. He can just do something super crazy that, like, if anybody else was trying to put out this game and we've seen all the stuff that we'd seen about it, you know, over the past couple of years, we'd be like, what the crap are they doing? Like, this is about, but with Kojima, you're like, dude's kind of a genius, so he'll probably pull it off, you know? And so now we're just waiting to see if he pulls it off.
I mean, like, if anybody else tried to do a game with a baby in an incubator, like, it's over. Like, that's not going to fly. But with that guy, it'll fly.
Yeah.
Because we'll play it for 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour and go, oh, yeah, all right, that makes sense.
Yep.
I hate to admit that, but you know we will.
Yep. No, 100% right. Oh, Kojima, we love you. A couple other things from Tokyo Game Show, just to mention. A couple of new games that are classic franchises in different ways. I'll mention Gungrave first. I don't remember playing Gungrave way back in the day when Gungrave was a thing. I don't know. Thoughts that you have about Gungrave. So there's a new one called Gungrave Gore that's coming.
Okay, so I didn't play a lot of it, but what I do remember is that it's pretty fast-paced.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Devil May Cry kind of a thing. And one, the reason that I'm really excited about it is that it kind of, this new thing, it has the same feel. The story's probably not going to be great. There's probably going to be some other stuff that's not great, but as long as that pace is there, I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Devil May Cry is absolutely the comparison. Like, again, kind of remembering because it feels like it was kind of a contemporary of early Devil May Cry. And so I could be wrong there on my timeline a little bit, but I feel like they were about the same time. And then just watching the gameplay of this new one, it's like, yeah, that definitely has that Devil May Cry kind of vibe to it, which I like Devil May Cry. Haven't played Devil May Cry 5 yet, which is apparently a pretty good game. It's not high enough on my list.
Am I wrong or is it on Game Pass?
It could be. Yeah. I haven't fired up Gears of War. I fired it up once just to like go, hey, I can fire up Gears of War and it runs. And that was super cool. But I haven't fired it up again. I need to do that. Speaking of games to play, Gears of War 5 is ahead of Devil May Cry 5 for me, which is too bad.
Yeah. And Outer Worlds and two. Yep. By the way, when you finish or get bored of Gears of War 5, you need to play Tomb Raider because that's also on Game Pass, and I have it on very good authority that game is spectacular.
Supposedly.
So yeah. Love us some Game Pass. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Game Pass. Freaking amazing. So much love there. The other game to mention that's getting a new iteration that's also weird, and so I'd love to get your thoughts on this one as well, is Resident Evil. It's getting this thing called Project Resistance. And so it's not really like a new Resident Evil game. It's this kind of spinoff of Resident Evil that's this multiplayer survival horror thing. And the way that it apparently works is it's five players, four of whom are playing co-op to like survive, and then one person is like the puppet master that's like getting to place like traps and zombies and stuff for them to run into, and then trying to kill off the people. I don't have a clue if it's going to be fun. It's an interesting idea.
What was the name of the thing that the guy referenced in the trailer that was a big deal a couple years ago?
Yeah, there was another game. I'm trying to remember what it was too. That was very similar.
I made a note and I'm like, I need to remember what that's called because guy made a point to say, yeah, this is what they were trying to do and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And this kind of works. I like the idea. I really like the idea. And especially if I get to be the Dungeon Master guy. Like,
exactly.
I could see having some fun with this. I really do. I like the idea. We may get it, and it may suck, but we have to play it. Which reminds me, we got to spend some money because neither one of us has st- still not played Resident Evil 2 Remake, which we have to play. Holy cow.
Yeah. There's people that are saying that's the best game of the year. If we haven't touched it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Time and games and the whole thing is just ridiculous at this point.
So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Just, yeah, boy, that it could very easily suck. But you know, it's a good idea.
It is a good idea. And I think you're right. I think the fun way to play it is to be the puppet master guy. I don't know. Like, if you're playing with the right group of people, and this is another one of those, we talk about this all the time with multiplayer games, is that some, you just have to have the right group of people. This isn't one that I want to play with four strangers online. You know, like, either as part of the co-op team or as the kind of puppet master. Because honestly, if you're the puppet master dude and you're screwing over your buddies, that's a whole lot more fun than screwing over random strangers. You know, like, that, like, sounds like a good time. Like, I could get into that of just, like, being able to troll your buddies. Again, I think with the right group of people, that's probably a really fun game. As a just, like, pick it up and do quick matches, I'm not into that.
So I had this vision in my head of you, me, your buddy Nathan, Duff, Spider, and Cabbage. And I'm the guy that is being the Dungeon Master, and just hearing, like, two or three of those guys just cursing at me as they're running through the stuff that I dropped. That seems like the most awesome thing ever, but I'm right there with you. I don't want to play this online with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to play with people, you know, I think is going to be the key for success. But if you do that, I think it could be a lot of fun. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was some of the big stuff from Tokyo Game Show. Of course, there was a lot more. The honest truth about Tokyo Game Show is there's a whole bunch of games that they talked about that I just don't know well enough. Like, there's Neo 2 coming. There's new Yakuza coming. There's new... they teased... what is the... Anyway.
Neo really has me intrigued. Because apparently the first one is really good. And again, we didn't touch it. We really should.
Yes.
But Neo 2 has me really intrigued. There's so much we need to play.
Yes.
That was the other... Neo was the other one that caught my eye. And I want to go back and see some more of that. Because I really feel like it probably is going to be worth the time. And I'm really happy that there was actually new stuff at TGS. Like, there was stuff that we hadn't seen. That's the thing that makes me happy about this more than anything else. Like, Final Fantasy is great. I'm glad we got to see that. More of Death Stranding is great. But there's people that were showing off new stuff nobody had ever seen before. And that, to me, is cool, because we're talking about that in September.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
That's a good time to be talking about games, for sure. So that's where we'll wrap with Tokyo Game Show stuff. But really quick, you kind of alluded to it earlier, I want to take just a little bit of time. One of the things we had planned to do while you were here, and then we'll get to soon, is playing with some new VR stuff. So we're not doing that now, but I would love to get a little bit of an update from you about some experiences there.
So it's in the box. It has been opened, but it's back in the box, because my brother came to the house last weekend, because my grandmother in the last 2 weeks has lost two of her best friends. Like, it has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with my immediate family. But my grandmother in the last 2 weeks has lost two of her best friends. And so my family had to go, like, before church on Sunday. Like, I'm in the sound booth, and they get the call, and they're like, yo, we got to go, and they just left. And so I had to get home, and my brother came over, and we're hanging out trying to figure out what we need to do. And so we're hanging out, and he sees the VR, and he's like, so there's this, and I'm here. Why don't we put that in? And I'm like, well, I kind of told Tommy I was going to wait on that. And he's like, yeah, but I'm here. Let's plug that in. So we did. And a couple of things that stand out is that this is where VR is going. And I'm really excited about what's happening with this thing because it's completely wireless. All the stuff's in the headset. That's a selling point of Oculus that Vive doesn't have. It's all in the headset, and you can walk around and take it anywhere. And the whole thing's on Wi-Fi. And so one thing that sticks out, I talk about the games all day long, but we've played most of the games. One thing that sticks out to me is you connect it to Wi-Fi using the app on your cell phone. Like, there's not a PC app. The whole point of this thing is to have this, apparently, out in public, attached to your cell phone. I don't know. Because it connected to my local Wi-Fi. And you actually pick the games that you want to download in the app on your phone, and it downloads them to the headset through your Wi-Fi. It sounds a little backwards, but it's cool the way it works, because we started out in my bedroom, which you know is a very small and cluttered space.
Yes.
And so he's trying to get it set up and, you know, figure out where he's going to stand and how much space he needs. And I looked at him at one point, and I was like, dude, no wires. And he was like, yeah, good point. And literally walked into my kitchen / living room, which is this big open area, and it didn't even hitch. Like, it was like, okay, you're in the new room. Here's the space you need. Here's, you know, let's get you set up. So if you're in a space, you don't have a lot of room, just go to a bigger space. That's awesome to me.
That is fantastic.
That's absolutely unbelievable. And I thought, how awesome would it be to have Wi-Fi accessible in or around your backyard, you know, yeah. Open area that's just kind of there, because he got into my kitchen / living room and off we went. And like I said, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about the games, because we played most of the games that are on there. Moss is on there. Super Hot's on there. Creed is on there, that we actually put the Creed demo on there. So all the VR games that you know and love are there. The difference is there's no wires, and you can go wherever you want to with this thing. And it's the headset, and it's two controllers. That's it.
Yeah.
And, like, I put it on my head, and the big problem that I have, you know, is the controllers. And the Oculus controllers are no different, because to grab something, you have to do something with your middle finger on the controller while you reach out and grab and get what you need to get. Well, you know me, that ain't happening. So I watched him do most of that, and then I did some seated type stuff that didn't really require a controller. One of the things I did was Netflix, which was very interesting. I know you have that on the Vive because of the virtual desktop. In this thing, it's actually an app.
Interesting.
And the thing that is mind-bending to me is that I don't really care that you're watching Netflix. Like, we all have Netflix. We love Netflix. It's good. What is interesting to me is when you boot into this app and you put in your information, it puts you in a room with a nice comfy couch and a coffee table, and Netflix is on this, like, big screen, right? And so you're just watching the screen. But I didn't care about the fact that the office was on in front of my face. I'm looking around this room that I'm right. in with like, mountains outside the window, and, like, I'm like spinning around my kitchen going, this is as good as the Bible. And I'm sure it's not. I'm interested to get there and actually have you put it on your head, because you've been in a Bible a lot more than me. And if either one of us is going to be able to tell the difference, it's going to be you. But I've seen Creed, I've seen Moss, I've seen some other games. I did not download Moss, but Creed looks like Creed. Like,
yeah.
There's no discernible difference to me. And if Moss, we've also seen Moss, we have Moss. We're going to have to rebuy Moss, because I want to know what that looks like.
Yeah.
If you put it on your head and say, dude, this is identical, it has automatically been worth the $400 that Dove spent. Thank you, Dove, by the way. There is a $400 version of this, and there is a $500 version of this. He got us the $400 version, which comes with 64 gigs of storage. And that doesn't seem like a lot, but when you consider that it's not that hard to remove games and download new games, I don't think it's going to be that big a deal. And some of it, apparently, I don't know how they're doing this, but some of it streams, because the Creed demo, there was no download. Like, you just click it, and boom, there it is. Like, Tyler clicked it, and he's like, dude, I'm in. And I'm like, what? Because my internet is not that fast.
Yeah.
So, some of it is streaming, and the crazy thing is that I couldn't tell that it was streaming. So that's a neat little trick. Here's the downside, and we're gonna talk about this more again when you get your head in the headset. It appears to be a little buggy. Maybe more than a little buggy, because we played for about an hour, which, by the way, the battery, like, you know my brother, you met my brother, I love my brother, but my brother flies by the seat of his pants. So, like, he pulls it out, and he's like, dude, I really want to play this. I'm like, it's got to charge first. He's like, cool. And so he puts it on the charger. In like 5 minutes, he's pulling it off. And I'm like, dude, that's kind of... Oh, no, it'll be fine. It lasted for the entirety that we played it. And we probably, between him and I, we probably spent 2 hours. But one thing that happened while we were messing with it was that it just lost track of one of the controllers. He was playing, I don't remember what he was playing, something with some small shooter that, for the life of me, I should remember the name of that, but I can't. But it's like one of the arcade, old school arcade, like spaceship type shooters with stuff coming at you, and you got to dodge, and kind of like an asteroids kind of a thing, you know?
Gotcha.
And he's like, yeah, one of the controllers in the ground, I can't do anything with it. It's still shooting. It's still doing what it needs to do, but I can't move it. And so we turned it off, turned it back on. Well, that didn't fix it. And so I'm like, oh, crap. We've had this 2 hours. My stupid brother pulled it out. Tommy hasn't seen it, and we already broke it. Like, how am I going to tell Buff? It took a hard reset to fix this problem. And what scares me is that there's a ton of people online having this problem, and more severely than what we did. Like, after we did hard reset, which was basically telling the machine, okay, you got to turn off and turn back on, do everything you need to do, because it's very obvious that when they built this, they did it in the interest of put it on and go. You know, you don't have to wait. It's right there. But the hard reset actually tells it, hey, you got to, like, actually stop and slow down and reset. After we did that, it worked. There's been apparently a lot of people online that haven't been that lucky. So I'm hoping that when I get to your house and we sit down and we play with it, that it doesn't last 2 hours and then decides to break. Sure. If that happens, I'm going to feel real bad for Duff. If you guys want to know kind of what's going on as far as that goes, before you purchase this thing, I would definitely say Google it. There's lots of stuff going on, lots of bugs. But all that being said, it is really cool tech. It is super cool tech. And the fact that the space issue does not matter, you can move, makes a huge difference. I cannot wait to get it on your head so you can tell me whether there's an obvious difference in fidelity and whether there's an obvious difference in optics, because I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
And one thing that this thing has that I didn't see on the Vive is a lot more options for TV. A lot more, like, DIY shows. Like, I watched some guy build a sheath for a sword. And it's like, and for the life of me, I know I'm supposed to know who this guy is, because my brother saw it and he was like, oh yeah, I know that dude. He's the guy that does this and that and whatever. And it was just watching him, like watching an episode of his show, but being in his shop.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more TV, like on your couch, like just chilling. And that's what Tyler said, was I could see myself buying one of these and being in the room while my wife is watching The Bachelorette or some other crap I don't want to watch. And so I'm watching Netflix or the NBA or something else in my headset. I could definitely see that happening. One thing that I want to mention, and then I want to ask you about before we wrap this, is that I had it on my head for probably 30 minutes. And after that 30 minutes, I had the VR eyes for the rest of the day. And you know what I'm talking about. Like, when you take that thing off your head,
yeah,
your eyes are like, what the crap did you do?
Yep.
And it doesn't go away quickly. And so we're still in the zone in that I don't feel like you're going to be able to use this for an extended period of time and not pay for it.
Yeah.
do you still feel that way with the vibe, or has it gotten better?
Oh, no, I absolutely still feel that way. It's like, I don't know how long it takes. When you first put it on your head, your eyes are like, this is weird, you know? And then, like, I can feel it happen where my eyes, like, get real wide, like, in the headset, you know? And then, like, your, like, eyeballs start drying out because you're not blinking as much and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I haven't gotten over that. Yeah, I haven't spent a ton of time in VR, especially recently. It's been quite a while since I broke it out. Now I want to. You're getting that itch back. I'm really interested. I don't know that there's a solution to that that's going to make it something that you'd want to keep on your head for a prolonged period of time. I don't know if I want there to be a solution. It's kind of nice having an incentive to take it off, you know, like,
right.
So you're not in that world all the time. A quick question I have about the whole thing. I'm super excited to get to play with it as well. Is there a way that you can watch what somebody else is doing? Is there like a shared screen thing?
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because for stuff that was copyrighted, like Netflix, you do not get this option. But for the games, like Creed, I was actually able to sort of see what he was doing on my phone. Like, it cast, there's an option to cast what was going on in the headset to the phone. If they want to improve this, please give us an option to cast whatever's going on in the headset to the biggest TV we can find.
Yeah,
because that was cool that he's like, hey, dude, I can cast this. If you're watching a movie or a TV show that has copyright issues, it absolutely does not work.
That makes sense.
It just doesn't. It's just like, nope, can't do this, sorry.
But for like a game, like that's part of the experience, that be able to have that kind of social aspect too, because we've mentioned it before. As fun as like the idea of VR being a very singular experience, like only one person can wear the headset, it is really fun to be in the room with somebody wearing the headset. And it's more fun when you're in the room and can see what they're seeing, at least in some facsimile of that. And so that's a big deal. I'm glad that there's some component to that. I hope that they strengthen that too. Make it like, if you could like cast it to Apple TV or Google whatever, or Fire Stick or whatever, that'd be great.
And I will say this, because it's wireless, we've talked about this before, and I'm probably going to eat my words for saying this, but if they had the option to where you could put it on your head, and then I could go into spectate mode and put another one on my head.
Absolutely.
I would buy another one today.
That would be cool.
I would, if I could have one and just give you the controls and say, okay, go, and all I had to do was watch, I'd buy another one today. That being said, while I'm in the headset, it's funny that you brought up your eyes. The headset is where I really notice that the focus of my eyes changes. Because while I'm in the headset, I literally have to tell my brain to tell my eyes to focus. Like, I have to think about it. Because my eyes are constantly changing focus. And unless it's right in front of me, it's blurry. And so that's why I want to get it on your head and have you tell me if the optics are better, because I think they are. I think my eyes just suck.
Yeah.
And it's not that everybody's going to write in and go, you need glasses. It's not that I do need glasses, but I have a muscular disease that affects every muscle in my body, including my eyes, and it's glaringly obvious when I'm in the headset.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have to tell me whether my brain is right and the optics are actually better, because I think they might be. If they're not better, they're at least on par with the Vive, which is scary, because we're talking about a portable unit that does not need a PC. And that's kind of mind-bending at this point.
Yeah.
And that's what Tyler said. He had a, like, I'm so mad at my brother, because he saw ours that we got from Duff. He saw the Vive that we got from Duff. Went out the next day and bought one. And then about 6 months later, he realized he didn't put it on his head, and he just gave it to some dude at work. like Jeremy Hollis, if you're listening, I love you, man, but like, dude, what are you doing taking a vibe from my brother? My brother's like, here, you want this? And Jeremy's like, hell yeah, I'll take that. And so that's what he did. And what he said to me was, it's crazy to me that we have a Vive sitting in there. I have an extra headset in my house that Duff sent me. But Tyler said, it's crazy to me that we had the Vive, we had the whole setup, and now it's all in the headset.
Yeah.
Like, it's all in the headset. And it wasn't something that he noticed. It wasn't like he put it on his head and he was like, well, it doesn't look as good. Like, he never said that.
Yeah.
His response was, holy crap, it's all in the headset.
Yeah, and I think that part of it can undo or at least cover up maybe slightly less impressive visuals. But the fact that both of you experienced it and weren't like, oh, this is definitely a level below the Vive is encouraging. Now, of course, our experience is on first-gen Vive as well. Like, the new Vives probably look better, and they're going to improve. But all that's super encouraging to hear. And you're absolutely right. That's the future of VR. Like, the wireless, all-in-one headset without sensors, you know, the inside-out kind of room scale, all that kind of stuff. Is where VR has to go, like, not just where it should go, but where it really needs to go to continue to be any way viable. And it is, and it sounds like it's going to continue.
One more, I know we got to wrap, but one more quick thing. I want Oculus folks, if you are listening, or Vive people, or Steam, you people, if you want me to play it, if you want me to have a real VR experience, I feel so bad for Duff because he sends all this crap and I can't really play it because of the controller issue. Guys, if you want to fix that in a heartbeat, somebody build me a glove. Like, I need gloves. If I can put a glove on my hand and all I got to do is reach out and touch something, I'm still not playing super hot, but I can do a lot more if I have a glove on my hand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a whole lot of dexterity, you know that, but I'm able to reach out and grab stuff. And so, especially for the VR experiences, which are arguably our favorite part.
Yeah.
You'd have a hard time getting me out of the headset if all I had to do was put on a glove and then just use my hand. Like, I'm getting screwed because of these controllers. Somebody build me a glove and I'll use the crap out of it.
Yeah.
That's all. That's what we need next is the glove.
Fair enough.
Other than that, like, I think it's going to be great. I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah, me too. I'm pumped.
I don't even know where to go at this point because we're doing TGS. We're talking about VR. I'm so excited. And if you want to go by the website and check that out or go by the Patreon page, you can figure out exactly how to do all of that. And that's what we would definitely recommend that you do. You can also email us, gaminguncensored@gmail.com. We love email. We need segments. There's also the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We're Gaming Uncensored, and we're going to play some games. We are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.